Thanks very much, Kit. It's all about numbers. Most of you were asked for a number. And the reason is that numbers haunt me because I can never get my head around them. I've always failed miserably at numbers. So before I explain what the numbers are, although some of you have guessed already, I read a poem which sort of explains my gross inability and, you know, lack of understanding of numbers. It's called Myopia. In the diagram, the red line A ends abruptly between vision and the sky, poised on a transversal plane, transgenre diverse, where understanding should be located. If it is a measurement of sight, my eye has been reduced to its curvature, points in a socket, and I flounder blindly, following little arrows that point to links between the membrane, K, and distance, a radial row of decimals that are supposedly pieces of pi. Mathematical truths crumble off the edge of my formulae, leaving me curious, not about the line, but the space that surrounds it, the unpartnered parenthesis hurling its contents into emptiness. So the actual numbers that I was asking you for, and I think some people came in late and I didn't ask you for numbers, so apologies for that. If you want, you can give me a number. We'll start with the ones that I have. They relate to page numbers in the book, so as I'm very lazy and cannot decide ever what to read, I sometimes do this, which is kind of fun because I don't know what I'm going to read. So the first one is page 67, and it's Kit's choice. So if you don't like the poem, it's Kit's fault. The day has lost track of itself in the hobble because of its reservation. You say the landscape is starved, the wings of birds clipped, a sharp-edged paranoia swoops for the kill of growth and flight, those places I've sought out through you for a moment's peace, silence, solitude. The only way it works is once removed from the world. I don't know how or why. What makes it any different? The narrowness, perhaps, of the ledge, good for a nest. Perhaps the sun, the wind that gives a sense of wings. And Dylan is next up. He's given me several numbers and had great fun. okay, 66. You also chose 64. No, 64 is the end of a poem. So I read 66. Tulips. The tulips are splayed, letting go a posture that seemed so pert. Perfect, I would have said some days ago. They are stepping out of a pastel pose, a pink formality that lent them classical airs, dinner party grace. And with age, just days, burdened by beauty, they bow, relinquish everything to gravity, and sprawl through the startled shadows in the hall, tango from their tight-lipped centre towards the wall, the stairs, the brush of humans, unaware of the petaled voice that only blooms when broken. Sarah chose 50. Okay, I'm not going to read that one. I'll read a different one instead. Since Sarah has a little girl, this is, you really need to know this actually, what a 10-year-old knows about sex. My son tells me that Marge and Homer Simpson often snuggle under the bed covers. Snuggling, he says, means they're having sex. I'm surprised at how much he seems to know, relieved there'll be less explaining to be done than I had thought. But I correct him on the snuggling. It doesn't mean they're having sex, I say. Sure, don't I often snuggle with you? He ponders this. Yeah, but when Marge and Homer snuggle, he insists, it means they're having sex. Fair enough, he obviously knows what's what. But there's just one thing that doesn't quite gel for him. Mom, he asks. And I can almost see him wink. Have you ever had sex with Dad? So, innocent despite it all. Bob, 52. Oops, wrong direction. 52. This is called Mid-Afternoon. Mid-afternoon, mid-life, mid-dream. Exactly where it's at. The tempo of clouds like ice flows drifting off the window frame. A slow clearance of winter stock to be replaced with fresh organic afternoons. Sky sheets the colours of coral seas. A curious customer stops on the window ledge, magpie beady eyes poking in at mountains of paperwork, the stale grey landscape of last year's wasteland, and instantly flies away. Beyond the west wall, the sun is sinking faintly gold into the fault lines and rubble of other people's lives on the shaken side of the world. Curiosity no more daring here than boredom, a clear sky. Today, exactly nothing has changed. Exactly nothing has stayed the same. And Mark chose 25. In fact, yeah, everybody, most people actually went for very high numbers, so 25, let's see. Okay. Oh no, this is 25. I'll do 24 instead. Floods of flames. Floods of flames in your eyes. Unspoken words inhabiting miscarried ground between us, setting seas alight, quivering on your lash like the rattle of a snake about to strike. Sweet bites that would burn my skin like a desert night, sweeter than the pecked out hollowed carcasses of men who dreamt of finding gold. I heed your warning, and I hush. Leave them well in your eyes, where they belong. They will be the mirage when there is no asylum but my own wilderness, and distance is longer than it takes to count each grain of sand. Funny the numbers come into that again with the counting. It's impossible. Elizabeth, 61. Okay. This is also about numbers. That's really weird. Okay, my son absolutely loves numbers. They just make complete sense to him. So I took him to the National Art Gallery one day, and he was fascinated by the paintings there. So this is called Renaissance, and it's a bit about him and his numbers and the paintings. Renaissance. The aura fascinates you. That someone could tell your mood just by looking at the air around you. What colour is your aura, you want to know, as if your life depended on it. Anything unexplained to fuel your endless hunger for learning outside of the steady logic of numbers, which are so easy for you. Something more challenging, the invisible, untouchable, capable of infinite mutation, infinity itself being another maddening form of magic. These pictures in the gallery have turned your aura bright. It's evident in your eyes when you see a fruit or a flower in the hand of an unknown child. Imitate a posture and imagine holding it for hours. You gleam with the discovery of imagination, something outside the logic that wraps you so securely. Of the saints, Madonnas, angels, you take away with you the intensity of pigments mixed to make their giant feet, the dirt speckled on their toes at the level of your nose, their souls, and then, mysterious and unforgettable, their halos, gold and nudging the folds of your mind, almost convincing you there might be answers elsewhere and unnumbered. And Louise. You was 72. Okay. Right. This is in the Andes. I see the landscape of the soul stripped bare. The mountain labour over faces in the rock that are all Inca mocking the tourist bus. I see the wind sprout arms to catch the children as they dream over the edge of cliffs and stare at us, oblivious to the precipice. I hear the stars, the language of catharsis pouring from the Milky Way. I hear Tambo, a resting place, Waiki, brother, Cancha, flat ground by the river, Picchu, mountain. I hear wonder in the eyes of a shepherd asking about the sea. I touch a cord, raw nerves, the blocks of ice that are my feet. I touch base and crumple exhausted from exertion, hoping to overdose on sleep and oxygen. I taste glaciers, the purity of our path winding its way for miles over so many millennia, it looks like it was easily done and might be done again. I taste laughter by candlelight, coca leaves. I smell the clay we're made of, the dust etched in our skin, tiny flowers that endure sub-zero temperatures, the past, the present, the future, proof that anything is possible, that things must change. And there are three more. Ed chose 69. Ed, there we go. Okay, so that is... Okay, this is actually a slightly long one. Kind of a suitable one for a number 69. It's, yeah, you know, it's Pablo Neruda wrote, what was it, 20 love poems and a song of, was it despair or something like that, when he was about 20. So this is a little bit based on that. Not even a proper love poem, but a song of sorts on reading Pablo Neruda. Maybe if I had thought about it, or had the wherewithal in 1986 to write one measly love poem, never mind 20, it would overflow with vibrant faith, the enthusiasm of budding love, awakening of eyes on flesh for the first time, drawn across a freckled back, the spine, and the surprise of pectoral tension, an intake of breath, delicate calves, ankles, toes, marshmallow sweet, soft and melting lips, the whole carnal lot, mountains of biteable buttocks, cosmic in my hands and in my mouth, with all the possible similes, the fireworks and metaphors of love, lost in an intoxicating torrent, blinded by sight itself, and the senses and the lack of sense, and youth knowing nothing of these things, relishing them nonetheless like nothing else before or after, maybe it would have been an earth-shattering poem, even just the one to be remembered by from then on. Acclaimed worldwide, award-winning, it might have made me, snuffed me up for life, and you would be queuing to pay for my words, forking out sums that warrant invitations to lectures, dinners, book signings, words that would most certainly never have been meant for you, instead of getting this improbable sort song of sorts, more primal, slightly off-key, something the words in all the languages of the world will never quite succeed in saying, and the way I like to write it when I can, with my tongue in your ear. Ronan 81. This is Quechua, which is, as you probably know, the language that the native Peruvians speak. If you listen, you hear the wind blowing you down. You hear the Milky Way spunking along the sky, and the night takes a deep breath, as if about to explain the exact reason it's so close to the black hole at the centre of love, but refuses to get sucked in. You hear the origin of thought pick a path through the unwritten word in heaps of dung penned in by stone walls, where a universe of hens and hogs daintily dance round each other at some angle other than the orbit of logic, and you know you've heard the truth. You hear silence, the desolation of altitude with its eloquent patterns etched to extreme locution, running with its tongue ablaze in the glaciers whispering as they melt. And the last one is Michael. 15, okay. Okay, this is a slightly sad one. Largo. These tapping metal warbling sounds come clinking out of their outdoor case. On a happier day, they could be birds in hands. Brief moments of simple pleasure, shared feathers flocking. A touch of untranslatable about the way the here and now unlocks their after spirit of grief, like fits of hailstones pelting fruit now absent on this frozen tongue, looking to drown a thought in the dregs of winter sunlight, trying to repair old strings that have been pulled too tight. And since that was a sad poem, I'll read a livelier poem, which is called Jazz in July. If you've been to Copenhagen in July, it's jazz month and it's absolutely brilliant. They have jazz on every street basically, and you can just stop and listen to it. I highly recommend it. So I wrote this while I was there one July. Jazz in July. On grey cobbles, grey pigeon wobbles to a jazz hobble beat. Neck low, sweep across the street. Sweet weed, sniff deep. So high those fully-fledged feet, feather flap, feather wide, flying fine, tripping to the sky, to the blow-cheeked trumpet beat, the sun-clap mellow bellow of the pigtail cello man, merry finger pluck and jam, big jazz bang, man, what a Copenhagen afternoon.